Joel Voss. Dr. Voss, you are a memory expert at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, great. So what does that mean? What do you do?
I direct a laboratory where we study mechanisms of memory and memory disorders. So we do imaging research where we bring in healthy people and put them through experiments to try to better understand how their memory works. We also study memory disruptions in people due to brain injuries and neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. And we also develop brain stimulation methods using non-invasive induction of electricity in people's brains to try to modify their memory abilities.
We're all getting a crash course, it seems, in memory these days. It's interesting, yeah. Isn't it? Not only because of the Jason Van Dyke trial here in Chicago, in which he was trying to recollect on the stand what did and didn't happen that night and what factors maybe affected his memory of that 4 years later, but obviously the Brett Kavanaugh story as well. And whether Christine Blasey Ford's recollection seems to be consistent with somebody who was truly trying to remember some things and only remembered some of the details, not all of them.
Well, you know, with respect to these potential issues that you're describing, you know, for the most part, we have, you know, pretty accurate and valid memories. You know, memory is good at doing some things, like remembering salient events from our past and allowing us to base our future actions on our history of experiences. But memory does have notable weaknesses, if you want to call them that. You know, memory is individual specific. You know, you can only remember what you experience. So you don't have a top-down view of everything happening in a circumstance. You know, and so it is, you know, very individual. And it's not like a tape recorder, you know, it's not like a video camera or a tape recorder that faithfully records every element of someone's experience. It is, you know, imbued with your notions about what's happening and, you know, the personal qualities of the experience, not necessarily their objective details.
Their personal qualities, meaning something that's more particularly good or bad might more deeply imprinted in your memory?
Sure, that's part of it. Also, you know, in a very straightforward way, you know, one of the things that I research is the interaction between attention or what you're attending to and what gets encoded in your memory and how memory biases what you pay attention to. But, you know, at some level, you know, given any circumstance you find yourself in, you'll be attending to some things and not attending to other things. And really, it's those things that you attend to, either because they're salient or meaningful or potentially even traumatic. Those are going to be the things that get preferentially encoded and will be later on available for memory, whereas those other things that you might not be attending to for a particular reason, either because they were peripheral, not particularly important to you, inconsistent with your preconceived notions or the things like that, will then not get incorporated into your memory and will not later be available for you to remember because they weren't really as key elements of your experience as those salient attended things.
So we sort of sort them that way, whether we tend to or not, huh?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. So I might not remember. Christine Blasey Ford may be lying top to bottom to us, but let's assume for a moment that she's not. Then it's logical that she would not remember the where and the when of a party, but she would remember something traumatic that happened that day?
Yeah, you know, I mean, kind of like a bit of the testimony that she gave where she kind of went into some of the detailed mechanistic brain-level explanations. You know, but at some level, it doesn't really take a very deep brain-level explanation to understand what's going on. You know, stop for just a minute and try to recollect any powerful, salient event from your life. Think about your high school graduation or a best friend's birthday party or something else that was meaningful, something that you can really relive, right? So take a second, find a memory, relive it. Okay, so I'm sure you can do that. Now tell me what day of the week it was.
I can't.
Now tell me what exact shirt you were wearing. Mm-hmm. Now tell me, you know, exactly which of your friends were there and not, you know, all these details. You know, some of them come along for the ride, not all of them do. And it's a pretty normal part of our experience that we can have vivid recollections of the past that lack a lot of the very specifying contextual details that allow us to place them in specific locations and at specific times, just because that stuff isn't the salient part of our experience, and so it just sort of falls away over time.
So let me tell you what I've been doing, and I think a lot of us have been doing a version of what you've just described. I have been thinking about high school parties I went to in the 1970s. And I can remember a scene where I walked into a living room, and it was full of kids, some of who I knew, some of who I liked, some who I didn't know, and some who I know didn't like me. It was one of those scenes.
Sure.
And when a cute girl walked through, the crowd would cheer or ooh. And when I walked in, they all booed. And and I remember, what am I, 17 in this scene, that was embarrassing to me. And it really hurt my feelings. Okay, I remember that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anything else about it except that feeling and them cheering when one girl walked through and booing when I walked in. Now, so I suppose that's representative of what you've been talking about, but that was just a mild humiliation. Isn't it possible, though, that if I were to suffer something very traumatic at that party, that I would better remember whose house it was and what day of the week it was? Doesn't that event maybe more focus my memory of the whole scene?
No. In fact, most of the research suggests that throwing some trauma into a memory will actually emphasize the disparity between the salient and the background. You know, if you think about it in terms of signal to noise, the signal is those things you pay attention to, the noise is all the extraneous things. It will actually increase that signal to noise, so it will make you more focused on the important details at the expense of all the other ones. And for a, you know, there are a variety of potential reasons. No one knows exactly why, but it does seem to be a feature of trauma and stress-related memories in general that there's more of a disparity, more of a honing of the most critical details to you at that moment and falling away of all the general context.
Yeah, so at the expense of that other stuff, we more...
And there could be a variety of reasons. It could be that in the moment you pay more attention to the salient, the things that are attacking you or hurting you or otherwise causing you stress, and that leaves you even less able to pay attention to all the extraneous details. It could have something to do with what happens to the memory afterwards. You know, so people tend to relive memories. That's what keeps them fresh, keeps them active, keeps them going, and when you relive it, you relive those salient details. You don't relive the day of the week. And so over time, you could be getting even more of an amplification of the difference between signal and noise.
I understand that, but isn't it possible that as we replay these stories year after year, we manage them, we change them a little bit, we put in details that later on in life we actually thought were true, but in fact weren't, and that the memory has itself changed over the years?
That is certainly possible, and that almost certainly does happen. But there is, you know, a question, and so it always comes down to, you know, there's no way to... You know, I haven't yet invented a time machine. I don't know about you, but, you know, it's very difficult to go back to the past and figure out exactly what details were experienced.
So then what do we say when someone says, I'm 100% sure that that was the face that I was looking at?
Well, you know, I think what that would probably mean to me, although this is just speculation, is that the identity of the individual was part of the original memory. And it was part of what was replayed over time. And so, you know, if her recollection very soon after the event included that person, then that would lead to that kind of confidence, I'd imagine. I don't think it's possible to ever be 100% sure about any memory. but there are some that you can be more confident about than others.
She sure seemed to be confident about that. What do you want to say to the likes of Senator Lindsey Graham or anybody else who said, well, Her testimony is fraught with problems. She doesn't remember the when or the where or the who, with the exception of maybe Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh. She doesn't seem to recall all of these details. Boy, that sure looks fishy to me. What do you want? And this is members of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee. How would you advise them on that?
Well, I don't know if there's an easy solution, because I'm imagining that every statement about the evaluation of individuals in this case is politically charged, and therefore it's hard to evaluate how much they even really believe the statements that they're making. But nonetheless, I would advise to take a little bit of introspection and think about themselves a little bit, think about their own memories, and put themselves on the same bar for every event that's important to them in their life or salient to them in their life. Can they recall every detail of the day of the week and everything else? You know, the answer will be no. And I think, as with most of the details, I think maybe a better understanding could be gained by just a little bit of self-reflection.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to put memories in people's minds and persuade them that that happened to them?
That would be very unlikely.
I thought that was a thing. I thought
contrived setup. It is possible. You know, there is some memory research where individuals attempt to implant false memory or to give misleading statements, but they typically involve very contrived setups to generate such a memory, or they involve implanting an idea and then repeated guided mental imagery to a person who is very suggestible. It would be very odd in this particular circumstance, at least to me, that could be a possibility.
But, yeah. Well, is it possible in your research that she would remember the details of the stairwell, the room, turning right, the bed, the bedroom, how she exited, and get the face wrong? That is, could you be right about that many details and then wrong about this, the most salient of the points? Do you know what I'm asking?
Usually when people are wrong about a detail, it's about something they don't have prior experience with. So, for instance, eyewitness testimony can be quite bad when you, after a crime, try to put the attacker's face, so one of the many faces in the lineup, that's fraught with problems. But the fact that she knew these individuals before the alleged attack would make it very unlikely that she would have misidentified them during the attack. That seems unlikely.
Well, you're getting to my point, because sympathetically, she was persuasive. She was convincing to even the president. And Brett Kavanaugh said, I'm willing to believe that something happened to her, but it just wasn't by me. So there is the president and even Brett Kavanaugh himself saying that seemed to be a persuasive testimony on her part. Her memory did seem to have a ring of truth to it, but she just got this one detail wrong. It wasn't me. It was somebody else. So now we're all trying to, get in that time machine that you don't have and figure out what exactly happened there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tricky situation and, a very difficult very difficult to piece together the past without some kind of corroborating evidence, and I understand the challenge on both sides. In general, though, I would say that just given the level of details that she provided and the nature of the situation, including her prior experience with these individuals and her confidence and the way that she's confident and the knowledge she has about the way memory distortion works and other things, I would think that the options here are either she's 100% accurate and telling the truth, or she's just utterly making it up and utterly lying, and it's a total fabrication. Or the third option is that there's you know, something very bizarre happened where she's in fact insane and was led through some sort of clinical reconstruction memory distortion process over the course of many decades.
Right, but we'll eliminate.
Which seems very ludicrous.
Okay, yeah. So, I'll eliminate the third option.
One of those three options, really.
And I'm going to eliminate the third. And if
one of those three. Yeah.
If I eliminate the third option, then you say it's more likely that she's completely telling the truth, or this is just, you know, some political hack job. But her memory as she was expressing it does seem to be consistent with an adult who, years later, having suffered a trauma, is recollecting it. That's what that kind of recollection looks like, correct?
And furthermore, consistent with someone who has a great deal of expertise and ability to separate fact from fiction within introspections. So I think given her training and the confidence and the ability that she was able to talk about, you know, how one can be confident about the past, this is something that she's given a lot of thought to. And I think even more unlikely that this is an instance of a deceived false memory that that she happens to believe with high confidence.
And since the other people weren't similarly traumatized, say at the party, does that also mean that they are less likely to recall it? There's been testimony, not that it happened, but at least that they didn't know of it happening. They don't remember the party. They don't ever remember going to the party. So everybody else's memory seems to have failed them that night.
Well, you know, again, I think it's easy to kind of lay out what the possible options are. You know, I think in order for that failure or lapse of memory to be true, one option would have to be, you know, attacking someone presumably as a salient event, unless it's something you do all the time. So I think the only way that this could be something that the only way that the alleged attack could have occurred and that the attacker just kind of forgot about it would be either that it was so routine that it just blended in with everything else and therefore did not stand out as being salient, or they were in some altered state of mind at the time, which can happen, you know, in terms of drugs or alcohol or something like that.
Drinking makes it hard to remember later on?
Yes. Yeah, especially, anyone, you know, many people can have experience with this. Oftentimes when you drink during an event, you can have a state-specific memory so that it's easier to access that event later on when you're also drinking, funny enough. But it is possible to, you know, drink so much that you lose control and lose periods of time, i.e. you just fail to form a memory for your actions over a period of time, and they're just utterly gone to you afterwards.
Yeah, well, we have this notion of blackout, and then that kind of erases that part of your hard drive. At least that's the way we've come to believe that. Is that what happens, that you can drink so much and have done something particularly heinous or maybe fantastic? Maybe you scored the winning touchdown. I don't know. But is it possible that you can drink so much that it actually loses the memory of that event?
Yes. Yes, that is definitely possible. I think, one way to appreciate it is that really when you drink that much, you also lose the experience. People are hardly conscious while behaving,
right?
Out of control, not. And so it also doesn't get laid down into a durable memory trace.
That's interesting, right? You lose the experience. What an interesting way to put it. While it may have happened, if you don't retain it, then as far as your brain knows, it never happened,
it's
right?
Gone. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And then just one more question along those lines. Then to what degree are we able to muscle back a memory?
You mean to retrieve something that
if I work at it, yes,
had been lost?
I'm going to think about it, and I'm going to replay that, and I'm going to really concentrate and try and find that feeling. You know, I'm going to work hard enough and honestly enough, earnestly enough, that I'll be able to recollect something. Is that a feature that humans have, that we can do that?
Not really. I mean, at some level, yes. You know, try to recall a friend, someone, an acquaintance's name. You know, you see a face and it's someone you met a few weeks ago and you can't remember their name. You can kind of try to retrieve it. Usually what that involves is giving yourself cues that kind of put you back into the original experience. You know I saw that person at the wedding. Okay, let's think about being at the wedding. Let's think about the people I met there, and boom, pop, it comes back into your mind. It's Charlie. You know, things like that. So we can kind of go through a controlled process to sort of bring back memories that are difficult to access for whatever reason. But if what you're getting at is, would it be possible to have somehow failed to have a memory because you were inebriated or otherwise, and now it's 30 years down the road and you're going to somehow try to tease it back out, that would be very unlikely to occur.
Any last wisdom you have for us about memory in general, in this case particularly?
Well, I guess the only thing I would say is that a lot of the things that I think are important for this case can be gleaned by thinking about our own memories. And it, even though it's fun to talk about these things and to serve as a memory expert, a lot of these are fairly common sense and fairly straightforward things that we all have happen to us. We all forget details. We all can vividly remember some things, but not other things. And, you know, so really, if you just think about it and try to think about your own experiences with your own memory, I think you can sort out what is likely possible and likely impossible in this kind of circumstance, as well as most others.
A friend of mine in the newsroom said about Jason Van Dyke, what happened the night that Laquan McDonald was shot was very traumatic to the officer himself. On the stand today, though, he said because it was so stressful and chaotic, a lot of the details about the order of events and what happened, when and where, what he was even doing, he doesn't recollect. It was four years ago this month. Do you have any sort of wisdom for us about his ability or one's ability to recall things like this?
Well, you know, again, it's hard to evaluate the veracity of any one person's statement because of the difficulty of being them and not being able to travel back in time. But, you know, if you just think about, you know, I always have a little bit of, hold a little bit of reasonable doubt, whatever you want to call it, in my mind. You know, imagine thinking about a chaotic or stressful event in your own life. Oftentimes it is easy to get the details jumbled, and it is easy to forget a lot of the details. When you're stressed out, when you're flustered, people make bad decisions, people don't notice things, and people often don't remember correctly what happened afterwards.
It's and so that's true about Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford then, too. It's possible both of them are telling you their truth, what they believe to be the events. In her case, what happened, in his case, that it didn't happen at all. It's quite possible he truly does believe that.
I am not in the position to be able to judge that. You know, honestly, I don't think anyone really is. I think what you have to think about would be the possible scenarios that would make that reality possible. You know, i.e., in order for her to be telling the truth, either it really had to have happened or she had to be making it up. And in order for him to be telling the truth, either he did it and just didn't care about it, or he blacked out, or it didn't happen at all. So one of those three.